Let us open the most accredited books of devotion and spiritual direction and see in what sort of way they are handled there, for their appearance in such quarters is very much connected with the whole question now under consideration. Take, for example, the noted catechism Spirituality of Father Surin. Speaking of true wisdom, he says, Question, in what does true wisdom consist? Answer, in ruling our judgment according to the common sense of the saints. Question, what do you understand the common sense of the saints? Answer, I understand what they commonly think of the maxims of the gospel and the ideas which they have of perfection. Question, what then are the sources of true wisdom? Answer, the gospel, the writings of the saints, their sentiments and their conduct, when all of them, or nearly all of them, agree in thinking in the same way of certain points of perfection, for example, of the practice of gentleness, of self-contempt, and of the virtues about which we have spoken of in the chapter on the Evangelical Council. For although the saints differ very much from each other, looked at with reference to their outward conduct, they resemble each other strikingly in their idea of virtue, and in their manner of practicing it, so that it is evident they are all animated by one spirit. This assemblage of ideas, maxims, and practices in which the saints agree form what we call true wisdom. It has two essential characteristics. The one is to be opposed to human prudence to such a degree as to look to men's eyes like folly, and the second is to be so deep and hidden that even the majority of those who practice virtue do not comprehend it, although no one who lives according to the spirit of Christianity can be altogether ignorant of it. Question, have you no example by which you can make us understand wherein this hidden wisdom consists? Answer, there are none more marked than those of St. Francis and St. Ignatius. They love contempt to such a degree that they wish to pass for fools and to perform actions which might earn that title for them. And although they had the precaution to warn us not to follow instincts of this sort without great reasons involving the glory of God, it is nevertheless true that they regarded this practice as an excellent degree of perfection, and that in this matter their opinion was conformable to that of the rest of the saints. There are several other points in this wisdom which the greater part of mankind has no relish for. For example, taking affronts and insults quietly, without seeking reparation for them. Question, besides the gospel and the writings of the saints, is there no other living rule on which we could form ourselves so as to acquire this wisdom? Answer, among the persons with whom we live, the common opinion of those who pass in the minds of the public for perfect may serve as a law and sure rule in this matter. For it generally happens that those persons whom we considered truly mortified, disinterested, and wholly given up to piety, all think alike, and without knowing each other, agree perfectly in the judgments they pass on the practice of virtue. It is, in fact, because they are all breathing the same air of sanctity, and are interiorly instructed in the same school, which is that of Jesus Christ. These persons, who live according to the maxims of the gospel, may be regarded as the depositories and interpreters of the minds of the saints, and we may apply to them what our Lord has said of himself. They who shall do the will of my Father shall know if this doctrine be of God. Let us then, who wish to acquire the true devotion, consult the opinion of the persons of whom we have spoken. As to men of learning and talent, if their wisdom is not based upon the mortification and abnegation of the gospel, they may indeed serve well for a rule in matters of faith and theology, but it would not always be safe to follow their opinion in the practice of this hidden wisdom which Jesus Christ has taught, and which the saints alone have relished. In fact, we see that scholars are so little agreed among themselves upon questions of this sort, and pass such conflicting judgments on matters of spirituality, that no great account is to be made of what they say of it. End quote. But there is also another point which should not be forgotten, and which seems to render the isolation of the saintly character more complete and impressive. For if the differentia of the saints is to be found in the combination of their marvelous and eccentric suffering, and all sufferings, especially the persecution and opposition of good men, seems to be an inseparable accident of sanctity, so soon as, and so far as, it is heroic. It was necessary that Christ should suffer and so enter into his glory. This, in its measure, is applicable to his saints. Not only are the sicknesses of the servants of God and the ordinary afflictions of his life inquired into, and the manner in which he bore them, but the falling away of his friends, the ridicule of the world, the opposition of even good men, are investigated with special care, and that too, while the debium of his virtues is under consideration, as though these afflictions and thwartings were, so to speak, authentications which Providence is sure to give to heroic virtue, and of even a more convincing nature than miracles, seeing that the investigation of these cannot be entered upon until the debium on the virtues has been solved and set at rest. Yet it is plain that these things add greatly to the likelihood of the saint's character being misunderstood, or giving offense at first sight. They impart a look of strangeness to his life. They naturally make us suspect singularity, or self-will, or at least a want of discretion in not keeping in favor with virtuous persons and authorities.